The Columbia Workshop, under the direction of Irving Reese.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4.
The Columbia Workshop presents the 26th program in a series devoted to experimental radio. During the past half year, we have presented several programs which were designed to acquaint the radio audience with some of the behind-the-scenes activity in broadcasting. Tonight, for the first half of our program, we shall present another demonstration dealing with the work of a group who, while least known to the listening audience, plays one of the most vital roles in every program broadcast, the control engineers. For the second half of this evening's workshop, you will hear a condensed version of A Voyage to Lilliput from Jonathan Swift's classic, Gulliver's Travels. Many of you have watched Columbia programs being broadcast and have wondered what the man in the glass enclosed booth does. Despite all the complex meters, dials, and engineering apparatus, his chief function is one requiring a great sensitivity and understanding of music and drama. It is known as mixing. Mixing is best explained by actual demonstration. First, listen while Clyde Barry, well-known Columbia baritone, who has graciously consented to assist, sings Thunderin' Wonderin'.
Thunderin' Wonderin', Wonderin', Thunderin', Holy child walking on the
microphones were used to bring you Thunderin' Wonderin', one for Mr. Barry and one for the piano accompaniment. While it was being broadcast, the workshop's control engineer, with his hands on a control dial for each microphone, mixed the proportion of sound each mic picked up, so that the voice and piano were balanced in proper relation to each other. Listen now while the control engineer shows you what can happen if the proportions are not mixed carefully. Was presented exactly the same each time in the studio. The difference you heard was caused by the mere movement of less than an eighth of an inch on the microphone controls of the mixing panel. This was a demonstration of comparatively simple mixing, since it concerned itself with the balance between only a single voice and piano. Imagine the problem when a choral group of 16 voices, an orchestra of 40 pieces, and a soloist are working on four or more mics. And you can understand why mixing has developed into a fine art. In radio drama, the problem of mixing is even greater than in music. Listen while a door is opened four times. The door was opened and closed with exactly the same force each time in the studio. But you did not hear it with equal volume because the controls were changed each time. Now see what can happen where the volume of a door closing is important in a scene.
How is he, Doctor? Not so well. He must be kept in absolute quiet. The slightest shock may be fatal. Yes. And I'd better leave now.
The door was closed very lightly in the studio, in keeping with the mood of the scene. But the control dial on the sound effects mic was not, and that was the result. In programs such as 12 Crowded Months recently presented, there were 104 sound cues, any one of which may have completely ruined a scene if the mixing was slipshod. And for that same program, the engineer had 10 microphone dials to control. Let us now illustrate an example of complicated mixing with a short scene from St. Louis Blues. The scene is in an airplane. The pilot is calling the ground station by radio. The ground answers. Listen now as we go through the scene. At the start, the proportions will be mixed carelessly to show you the many errors that can be made. Then, the engineer will bring the voices and sound into their correct relative values.
This is Randolph, R-12, mail plane on Cleveland, New York run. I'm in bad storm area, altitude about 10,000 feet, visibility zero, ceiling zero, lost radio beacon signals. What's wrong? Go ahead.
Hello, R-12. Hello, Randolph. Our beacon antenna blown down by storm. Our beacon antenna blown down by storm. Where are you? Where are you? Go ahead.
Columbia engineers serve a rigid apprenticeship before programs requiring involved mixing are turned over to them. Through the long rehearsal hours, scripts are carefully marked, with each position of the artist and sound cues noted. On the air, they must watch the movements of every person in the studio to compensate for any deviation from rehearsal positions or volume. They watch the breathing of singers to anticipate how loud the next note is going to be, or the sweep of a conductor's baton to determine whether a crescendo is coming. All this while delicately adjusting from 3 to 12 dials to avoid some of the mistakes we illustrated. In future workshop programs, we shall present some of the dramatic highlights behind the scenes with control engineers.
And now the Columbia Workshop presents A Voyage to Lilliput, in which special effects and mixing will be used in an attempt to capture the illusion of Swift's immortal story.
Some 200 years ago, Mr. Lemuel Gulliver of England set out on his first voyage of exploration in unknown seas. His ship ran aground on some rocks and sank. Gulliver was washed onto a nearby island. When he awoke, he found himself bound hand and foot. In his ears, he heard what he first took to be the strong buzzing of flies.
Somebody asking me questions? Well, who is it? Where are you? I don't see anybody.
Oh, please don't answer. You're breaking your eardrum.
Oh.
Turn your head over to the right. I'm right beside your ear.
Beside my ear?
I shall move further back. There. Can you see me now?
Oh. Yes, I see you plainly enough. I must be still asleep. Well, you can't be much over 5 inches tall.
Look beyond me. There are thousands of us. Oh. We
prisoner? Whose prisoner? And for what offense? Lilliput? Oh, is that the name of this country, then?
It is. And what is your country? And how do you come here?
I can better answer your questions if you'll loosen me a little. I can hardly breathe.
Oh, His Imperial Majesty desires that for the present you remain bound.
But I shall not harm you. I'll give you my word as an English gentleman. As you wish. I await your pleasure. Whom have I the honor of addressing?
I am Cyrus Balgulam, High Admiral of Lilliput.
My respects to your emperor. I will show no resistance, and I'll do whatever he wishes. I humbly thank you. I beg you further to bring me a little food. I'm weak with hunger.
I have ordered 100 men to apply ladders to your thighs and mount them to your chest. By walking along it for a little distance, they can empty baskets of meat into your mouth.
Well, it were well to warn them to hold fast while I swallow. For if they lose their balance, they'll fall to the ground and be dashed to pieces.
They shall be so warned. I fear that we have but 2 barrels of wine. You shall have more when we arrive at the palace.
Oh, well, thank you. They will do for the moment. But how do you intend to get me to the palace? Unless you free me, you'll surely be unable to convey anyone my size.
Oh.
What do you intend to do with me when you get me to the palace?
That is a matter for the king and his counselors to decide. You may be sure that you will be used with all fairness. People of Lilliput, we must prepare to take the man mountain to the palace.
Yes?
Novato, Oman, Eslamo, Gadillo, Jebamale, Aleku.
Galbasto, Mamaran, Evlamo, Gadillo. What was the last one?
Jebamale, Aleku.
Jebamale, Aleku.
Will you now read the royal salutation?
Most mighty Emperor of Lilliput, delight and terror of the universe, whose dominions extend 21,120 yards to the extremities of the globe. Monarch of all monarchs, whose feet press down the center of the world, whose head strikes against the sun. Greetings. I agree to observe your laws to the utmost of my ability.
Solomon!
Yes? Who is it? Secretary for what?
For private affairs.
Oh.
Will you grant me an audience? I have something important to discuss with you.
Certainly, Reldesal. Would you like me to lie down so that you can speak directly into my ear?
I would rather you took me up with the palm of your hand.
As you wish. Climb on. That's right. Now, what have you to say to me? There's nothing I lack, Reldesal.
Well, I am glad to hear that. Second, I must congratulate you on acquiring your liberty.
I've been informed that you were instrumental in gaining it for me, Reldesal. I wish I could do something to show my gratitude. What has the situation at court to do with it?
I shall explain. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Well, then, although to foreigners, such as yourself, Gulliver, our empire appears to be in a flourishing condition, actually, we labor under two mighty evils.
And what are they? I can understand your troubles at home, but what do you mean, an enemy from abroad? Where is abroad?
Abroad is the Empire of Blefuscu, almost as powerful as Lilliput here, and its deadly enemy. There has been bloody warfare between the two kingdoms for 36 moons.
And what caused the warfare? The big what?
The big Indian.
Oh.
And their hatred of the King of Lilliput for his attempts to force them to observe barbarous and revolting customs.
Who are the big Indians? And what are the customs you speak of?
To answer the latter question first, the custom of breaking a neck at the little end.
Breaking an egg? You're joking, surely.
Now, please, Gulliver. You must be careful in speaking of our most sacred tradition. I think that I myself am reasonably broad-minded. But others may think that you are mocking them, and they would try to do you a mischief.
Oh, forgive me, Reldesal. I spoke in haste. Now, how did this custom originate? And the big Indians, I presume, did so refuse.
Exactly. There was a civil war, and the big Indians were defeated. Most of them fled for refuge to Blefuscu, where they joined the emperor of that country in warring against Lilliput. They do so to this day.
Ah, this is most grievous. Is there no peaceable method of settling the dispute? How do they justify their cause?
They say it is a fundamental doctrine of our great prophet Lustron in the 54th chapter of the Grundekraut, which is their Alcoran.
And is there any truth in this?
We think that they frame the text to suit themselves. The
Is that not plain enough, Reldershill? Well, the belief does you credit. But how can I help you in this matter?
The Emperor of Lubusku is at this very moment preparing a great fleet of warships to make a descent upon us. His Imperial Majesty, the Emperor of Lilliput, has commanded me to lay this account of his affairs before you, so that you might think of a plan to help us.
I present my humble duty to the Emperor of Lilliput. And let him know that although I, a foreigner, have no wish to interfere in the affairs of the two kingdoms, yet I'm ready to defend his person and his people.
Oh, thank you, Gulliver, thank you. His Majesty shall be informed of your decision at once. Yes, His Majesty shall be
poisoned arrows of the Blefuscudians, Skyfirst Broglorum. Might I not have been blinded?
Any of us would have risked as much for the Empire.
Were I not being continually assured of your high-mindedness, Skyresh Bulgalum, I should question the sincerity of your attitude in this affair. Of course, it can't be affected by the fact that the king created me a Nardak, the highest honor in the Empire, whereas you are merely a crumb-grum.
Everyone is convinced of my good faith in bringing you to trial.
And if they spoke truly of your malice and jealousy, who among you will be so reckless as to destroy one who can be of such value to Lilliput? Are you quaking, my valiant High Admiral?
You will not inflame me, Durakak, Gulliver. Our case against you is too strong for me to take notice of your insult.
Well, what is your case after all? A very feeble one.
When you brought the ship from Brevusku, you were commanded to return, subdue the people, and bring the Emperor of Brevusku to the king as a prisoner.
I know well whose scheme that was.
No matter. You refused to obey the king's command. You were therefore guilty of high treason, for which there is but one punishment.
State to the council my reason for refusing. Reason?
And a third is age of a traitorous one. You come to some understanding with Pripasku, and we shall soon be the victims of it.
It seems that I can't convince you of the injustice you're doing me. But look at the matter in a practical light. I gather your food for you. None rots in the fields. I can gather your entire harvest for you in an hour or so.
I eat it at the same rate.
I'm constructing magnificent buildings for you. Your heaviest stones are like child's blocks to me.
Yes, and you can fling them at us as easily.
If you fear for the safety of the capital, why could I not be an overseer for your far dominions?
We should be fools to let you out of our sight. No, Gulliver. The virtues you claim for yourself are also your drawback. We have good reason to believe that you're a big Endian at heart.
Have they gone, Reldesel? Yes, Reldesel.
Thank you, Gulliver.
Is there any hope for me?
No, Gulliver. Your championship of Lefosco is only one of the charges against you. There are others that they have not told you yet.
And what are they? Bulgalum has thought of all this.
Yes. He says that you have cost us already over $1.5 million gold stuff.
These people that have constituted themselves my enemies, why should I not destroy them? Once bent on resistance, the whole strength of this petty empire could not subdue me. What means?
A short while after you came here, a huge vessel was found cast up on the seashore. It will hold thousands of our people, although only 4 or 5 of yours.
It must be one of the boats that broke loose when the ship sank. But I've no means of sailing it.
I have attended to that. For under pretext of using it as a great warship, I persuaded His Majesty to have sails made. 907 seamstresses have been busy since. The ship is now ready and seaworthy.
Ah, this is most generous of you, Reldesel.
Oh, it is nothing. The vessel has also been stocked with food. Do you think you can navigate it to this other world you speak of?
The chance is small, but I'll take it. For I'd rather risk death in the sea than be compelled to defend myself in a spiteful and an ungrateful kingdom.
All right. Go then, Gulliver. The vessel is due north. Follow the stars.
Yes. They are the stars that shine on my own world, too. Pray heaven that they'll lead me there. Goodbye, then, Reldesel, good friend.
Goodbye, Gulliver.
And goodbye forever to this trivial and venomous land of Lilliput.
The Columbia Workshop has presented the 26th program in its series devoted to experimental radio. This evening, you heard a technical demonstration on control and mixing in radio and a condensed version of A Voyage to Lilliput from Jonathan Swift's classic Gulliver's Travels. It was adapted for radio.